So Carol Lafayette Boyd, her brief biography. Carol has been active with the Saskatchewan African Canadian Heritage Museum, board since 2005. Carol is a wife, mother of two, grandmother of three, and great grandmother of one, sister to seven, niece and aunt and cousin to so many. She trained as a psychiatric nurse and is a registered social worker. Carol retired in 2005 after 33 years with the Saskatchewan government in social services and corrections and public safety. She is a master track and field athlete, have taken up competition in 1992. She's a member of the Canadian Masters Athletics Hall of Fame. Carol is the family historian and has been working on their genealogy since 1982. So on behalf of the promotions team, I'd like to welcome Carol.
Thank you for having me, Mary. We can say there's a few people here, it's so cold outside. The university's full of kids, but we don't necessarily want to know that. Okay, so we'll probably finish a little early, but I have a presentation here about Black history. And that picture there is of the Indian Head Rockets. It's that baseball team that was there in the 50s on Indian Head, and they have a museum out there. I haven't been out there yet. Has anybody been to the Indian Head? Well, I think they have a museum about this, but the actual baseball Hall of Fame museum is in North Battleford. Well, Battleford, North Battleford. And they have a lot of information about the teams. And for your information, Satchel Paige, does anybody ever know who Satchel Paige was? He's the best baseball player ever. He happens to be of African ancestry, but never got to play in the big leagues. And but he actually played here in Saskatchewan, not as for a Saskatchewan team, but against a Saskatchewan team. So the topic that Mary had suggested is preserving our heritage. That's a picture of our family reunion we had in 2010. And I think the last I counted, there were like 400 and some descendants. My grandfather came in 1906, and I'll talk about that a bit. But this is the picture. This is the first family reunion we had. It's really hard to see. In 1970. And at that time, there were 99 people there, but I don't think they were all Lafayettes. I need to check that out. And so there we are now, and a lot weren't there for the reunion. They're kind of in different places now. I have my aunt married an American, and she lives in the States, and we have a grandniece that lives in the States, so. But that's our family, and my uncle Danny, he's the only one left of the original children that were born here, the first generation. So he's the kind of baby of the family. Okay, so we're going to talk about Black History Month. I want to explain to you about the Saskatchewan African Canadian Heritage Museum. Anybody heard of the Saskatchewan African Canadian Heritage Museum? Yeah. I think I have information on that. Okay. And we'll talk about some of the history through the United States, Canada, Saskatchewan. And then I'm going to talk to you about myself growing up in Saskatchewan. So Black History Month, it's the proud legacy of Black Canadian. Goes back to the early beginnings of Canadian history. I don't know if you've heard of Matthew DaCosta, who came in the late 1500s and 1600s. He was an African that knew several languages and was able to interpret for the explorers that came from Britain and France and wherever. And he interpreted for between the First Nations people and the explorers. So the great sacrifices and tremendous contributions of their community have helped to create the Canada of today. the people heard of Elijah McCoy, who's a Canadian of African ancestry, who developed a whole lot of things to do with engines and whatever. And if you've heard the expression, the real McCoy, it's because of him and all the things that he developed. In the United States, Black History Month began in 1976, and then the United Kingdom picked it up in 1987, and it began here in Canada in 1995 when the former politician, Canadian, the Honorable Jean Augustine, put the motion forward in the House of Commons, and Canada formally recognized February as Black History Month at that time. However, before that, there were a lot of black porters. Back in the 50s in particular, from the 40s and 50s, one of the jobs that black men could get was as a porter on the railroad. And my brother ended up doing that, my second oldest brother. My oldest brother stayed on the farm, and my second oldest brother went off with his great uncle to become a porter. And, he was a red cap. And red caps were different than kind of porters. I think red caps did the menial work, and the porters, they walked along and made sure people were feeling comfortable. But they started an organization, and they wanted a Black History Month, but it wasn't formalized until 1995. So they were doing something back in the 50s and 60s. So that was on February 6th, the Honorable Jason Kenney, Minister for Multiculturalism, issued the following statement after the official launch event for Black History Month at the Canadian War Museum. Every February, Canadians mark Black History Month, an important annual celebration of the accomplishments of Canadians who trace their family heritage to Africa and the Caribbean. Now, what I found interesting is how he said that, to Africa and the Caribbean, because there is some controversy, I guess, from people of the Caribbean, did they originate from Africa? Some people are wondering that. But this year, as we mark the 100th anniversary of the beginning of the First World War and the 75th anniversary of the beginning of the Second World War, Black History Month provides an opportunity to recognize the efforts of Black Canadian soldiers during these wars and in other military campaigns. And you see my pictures over there of my uncles? Those were my uncles. They were in the Second World War. Actually, my Uncle Bob, who would be this woman's son, he's my great uncle, that's my great grandmother, he was in the First World War. And the story goes, I'll tell you some stories. I can tell stories about people who are no longer living, and I don't think their descendants will hear about this. But my Uncle Bob, apparently, there was a group in African Americans that had come up to Amber Valley in Alberta and to Maidstone in Saskatchewan. And it is said that my Uncle Bob did something illegal. And so instead of going to jail, he was sent off to war, the First World War. That's how he got in. And I know my mother's father went to the First World War also. Okay, so that's who I was talking about. My Uncle Glenn and my Uncle Earl, and they both passed away. They were there for the family reunion. And now I want to talk to you about SACM, Saskatchewan African Canadian Heritage Museum. And hi, Vanessa. Hi, Judy. Oh, well, welcome. Now I have to watch what I say. These are my former colleagues.
Sorry, too late.
Yeah, just finish the meeting. Yeah. I have to be honest now, I guess. The Saskatchewan African Canadian Heritage Museum was founded in February 2001 and incorporated in May 2004. And we're a member organization of the Multicultural Council of Saskatchewan, SaskCulture, and the Museums Association of Saskatchewan, some of the museums here. And SACM membership includes organizations and individuals, and anyone is welcome to join the Saskatchewan African Canadian Heritage Museum. It's open to anyone that's interested in the history. It's It's not just for people of African ancestry. Okay, so all that join. And one of the things that we do is when we have an event and people want to join, we let them join perhaps twice the first time. So, and you want to join too. Join for half price. Okay, let's look at our vision. SAP's vision, mission, and values. Our vision statement is that we are equal partners in the heritage and development of Saskatchewan because people of African ancestry have been here a long time and more are coming, and that's really good. So.
A lot more.
Pardon?
A lot more.
Yes, yes. And our mission statement is to preserve and celebrate the heritage of African Canadians in Saskatchewan. And so one of our goals is for us to celebrate people who, all people that are of African ancestry in Saskatchewan, anybody that has a story to tell about their journey here or their what they're doing now, whatever, is because we want to put it on our website. So we want you and your families to go on there. I didn't bring any forms for that, but we would really like you to be on there so people will recognize your stories. Our value statements are inclusiveness, equal human dignity, perseverance, and contributions, because just about everyone of African ancestry that has come here, they've had to go through a lot of perseverance to get here. I know my grandfather persevered, and he stayed at my great-grandmother's. When she came, they had to really persevere. I mean, can you imagine them being out there today? Because they were out there in this weather. We are having a difficult time with all our electricity and running water in our cars and our gas heat that comes in the doors. They had nothing. Some of their homes were in mud huts, and they had the horses and the buggies. But, and as I was saying to some people, my uncle, he was two when he arrived here, and they put him in a tub or something and put him on an oven to keep warm for night. So he's ready. Okay, early African migration in Saskatchewan. Okay. Feel free to ask any questions at any time if you think of something you want to ask any questions. Dr. Alfred Schmidt-Schad, has everybody heard of him? I didn't hear of him until 1984. Garth Bain was one of the Yeah. So, in 1896, Alfred Schmidt-Schad comes to Nipawin from Ontario. His family had come up to the United States. He's the grandson of Abraham Doris Schad, an influential activist in Ontario. And Marianne Schad, she's quite well-known activist back in those days. His heritage is from the United States, where his family were free, and they came to Canada in 1853, but they were in Ontario. And Alfred was a teacher, a doctor, a pharmacist, a newspaper owner, a farmer, and a politician. When he first came, this is the story that I think Garth told me, but others aren't telling it, and his biographies are not telling it. When he first came to Nipawin and was teaching school for a couple years, then he went back to Ontario to get his medical degree, and he went to London, England, apparently, to get some training there. And when he came back as a doctor, they wouldn't let him practice medicine on white people. They only let him practice on the animals and the First Nations people. So he was a veterinarian and a medical doctor for First Nations people. But an influential white man became very ill, and Dr. Schad was the only one around. And so he became a famous doctor, pharmacist. He ran for the legislature before Saskatchewan was a province, before 1905. He ran at that. He wasn't successful in being elected, but he also had resources, so he traveled off to Ontario to raise his voices too. But he died in 1915 in Winnipeg. He had appendicitis, and when they had his funeral in Melfort, because that's where he ended up being, doctors and now for the funeral procession was over a mile long. That's how important he had become. With horses and buggies and some old Model Ts, I guess they might have had been, a 1950, whatever vehicles they had. It was mostly horse and buggies. So, and they have a monument of him. There's a street named Shad in Melford. And many people who had children named their, gave their second name or something to Shad, their child's name is Shad. So. And next year, Sachem would like to do a celebration of the 100 years after his death. So we'll be doing something in Melbourne and hopefully something here. Okay, so that's, he was the first documented person of African ancestry that we know of that was here. So, and so of course where they came from, one of the, they came from, first, of course, everybody knows, we took the ships that way back then from Africa over here, and a lot ended up, this thing you're able to see under the red dot. Of course, I can't even see it. We mostly ended up around here in Virginia and up there, all along there. I was trying to look, where's Alabama? Where's Alabama? Because my, I'm going to tell you some history that I learned about. It's oral history, and then some of it I kind of decided that's how it happened. But the Lafayette side came from Virginia through here. I think they must have gone through Kentucky because in the 1870 census it says my great-grandfather was born in Kentucky, but he wasn't. He was born in Virginia because when he crossed the border, he gave his birthplace as Portsmouth, Virginia. My grandmother's, I think they ended up in Alabama, came over to Oklahoma, or over to Texas, and then to Oklahoma. So I'll start with a bit of my history. There was this guy named James. He was a slave of William Armistead, and Armistead was given permission by his master. His master was William Armistead, to join the revolutionary cause. So the American Revolution, what was that? Was the date 1789, I think it was. Yeah. So in 1781, he joined the army and was put in the service of the Marquis de Lafayette, and he was a French general who was working with the Americans against the British. And they were desperately trying to fight the chaos caused in Virginia by the turncoat soldier, the British, Benedict Arnold. Lafayette's forces, or the forces diminished by British General Charles Cornwallis's troop, Lafayette needed reliable information about enemies' movements. And so James, this is James Armistead, began his work posing as an escaped slave entering Arnold's camp as an orderly and guide. Now what, back then, the British had said, any of you slaves that come and work for us, we're going to give you your freedom when you win this war. The Americans weren't doing this, so I believe James was probably going to go, he's wise, with whoever won the war. but he did seem to be helping the Americans more, so maybe he was more sensitive to the American side. Armistead was able to travel freely between both sides. One day he discovered that the British naval fleet was moving 10,000 troops to Yorktown, Virginia. And I find it amazing, there was so many people that died. There was over 500,000 of them that died in that war. I mean, using the intricate details, Armistead provided Lafayette and George Washington, they lay siege to the town, crippling the British military, resulting in the surrender on October 19th, 1781. Is that the correct date? Anyway, despite his critical actions, Armistead had to petition the Virginia legislature for his freedom. And General Lafayette assisted him by writing a recommendation for his freedom, which was granted in 1787. In gratitude, Armistead adopted Lafayette's surname and lived as a farmer in Virginia until his death in 1830. Now, when I was a kid, my dad
told us we got our name from General Lafayette, but as a kid I wasn't interested. So I didn't ask him, how can we say that? And he also said, I can remember so clearly one day, the girl across the street said, Carol, what's your ancestry? Like, what's your background? And I said, we were slaves. And my dad said, no, Carol, we were free. And I thought, well, poor dad, he's so embarrassed to admit that we were slaves. He's making up the story, we were free. But I never asked him. And then after my dad passed away, one of the people that I worked with brought the military magazine that told the story of James Armistead Lafayette. And there's James Armistead Lafayette. Someone painted a picture of him. His birth date is, some people say it could be 1781. But you've seen some of my family. Doesn't he look like us?
Yes, he does.
I looked at that and I just about, I was just so amazed because, and so I was showing you a picture. That's my dad there. My dad is older there.
Yeah.
He was probably 79 or something there.
But I can
Did
see,
you see that
you?
Nose?
I can see
the
eyes.
Oh, no, but I just looked at it and I knew that was mine. That what I can't do is, he died in 1830. His grandfather was born in 1847 in Virginia. And so there's 100 years between his grandfather and that man. So that man is either Edward, his grandfather's great-grandfather, or grandfather, depending on his age. But it was just too amazing when you look at those noses. So
I can see it here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the hairline too, and the gray hair. Are you saying he looks like, I look like him? Yeah,
I can see resemblance. You know where? Right in through
my
hair.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, and that's like, he was born in 1748.
I'm looking at your bone structure.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So my goal is to get us connected. I have Edward born. I mean, have him in Iowa in 1870, and I can't find him elsewhere. But the interesting thing is that, and in searching for my genealogy, there was a man in Colorado who contacted me because his mother had been a Lafayette, and she had her ancestor had come from South Carolina, and we had a story of one of the Lafayettes had been traveling north and ran into his first wife who had been sold in slavery. And the second wife said, well, you take her, because she's the one you love, so you take her. And she went off. And my dad, when I was trying to start asking some questions, he said, some of our former names were like Brown or Johnson, something like that. And this guy from Colorado, his mother, his grandmother, great-grandmother, whatever. Her name was Dicey Brown. She had been married to a fairy Lafayette and had gone to South Carolina. So I started communicating with the man from Denver, and I sent him a picture of our family and dad's 88th birthday. And he phoned me and he said, I'm not going to comment on your picture, but I'm going to send you a picture of myself. So he sent a picture of me and he looked just like my dad. He looked more like my dad than my dad's brothers looked like him. Mm-hmm. And we had been planning a family reunion, and so we were having a meeting. And I covered up the picture, because he had a mustache, and I covered up the Bob's picture. And I said to the guys, who do you guys think this is? And they looked like, are you crazy? It's a dad, of course. So I know we're kind of related there, so there is some connection there. But before I could meet Bob, he was involved in the 9/11. Helping out there, and he came ill, and I never did get to meet him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and here, my sister and I, we went to Virginia, where his picture is. That's the picture of James Armistead up there. James Armistead Lafayette. And so we took the picture with him. That's her great-granddaughter that was living in Virginia at the time. So that's a big goal of mine. If Sapka would leave me alone and let me find time to watch my auntie. Okay. And in 1906, so back to my dad,
Louis was my grandfather, his wife Helena, and the little Ernest, who was about 1 1/2 at the time that we put in the tub, and his brother Goldie, Joseph, arrived in Regina. And it's interesting, this Goldie, he was younger than my grandfather. And he had grayish brown hair, apparently. And when he was killed in a car accident in Saskatoon after the fair, it was about 1928. But before that, I found some letters from, or not letters, newspaper article from Iowa that Goldie had died in Canada from some illness in about 1918. He'd been sick in the hospital, I think, by the time the notice got to, from my Uncle Jess to his family in Iowa, that he was ill. They figured he had died, and they put it in the newspaper, but he didn't die until 10 years later in Iowa. But when they wrote it up in the Saskatoon paper, it was kind of written up kind of different, like that he was bronzed, colored person that he killed in an accident. Didn't, most of them would always say they were colored people or Negro or something, but he didn't say that about him. So, and my grandfather Lewis had sent money for land, but when he got here, no one reported receiving the money. Mm-hmm. So, they think that he was ripped off. And he lived at North Winnipeg Street. And my son would say that every time my dad drove gravel truck out there, that he would say, "That's where I was born." That's where North Winnipeg, where the buses are now. Okay, so from 1906 to 1911, my dad Carl is born in 1907. His brother Homer, so these are these guys here. This is my dad here, and my uncle Homer. They were born in Regina here. And Anne, I thought she was born in here, but she must have been born out of the farm because they moved out to the homestead in 1911. My grandfather had been homesteading out there since 1908. Finally moved the family out there. He would travel to McGee, Herschel, Andrea, Fisk areas of homestead, and that's the homestead there. That picture, this is, he would hire people, mostly people of African ancestry, to come up, and there would be a whole crew of them, a harvesting crew, that would do the harvesting for him. Okay, so the Maidstone area, that's another area, that was a bigger area, because in 1910, whole crew of 200 people, not, I believe it was 200 people, not 200 families, but 200 people came from Oklahoma to reside at Maidstone in that area. There was a lot of rock there, and so some people went back to the States because it was just too hard for them. And my great-grandmother ended up in North Ballaford. It's interesting, though, when they wrote when she crossed the border, she said she was going to North Ballaford, but she didn't. She ended up in Amber Valley in Alberta, but then ended up in North Ballaford. My grandmother, Texanna, was born in, I think it was 1867, and slavery had ended in 1865, but they didn't tell them that they weren't slaves anymore, and she was treated as a slave for at least until she was 12, because then she got married at 13. And she had scars on the back of her back, so I can understand why some of them were so feisty, because the story goes that at Amber Valley, she was angry with her husband and kicked him in the stomach, and so he developed peritonitis and died, so they asked her to leave and leave the Alberta, and she ended up in North Ballaford, where she actually was a foster mom to any black kids that would arrive there. Apparently, it was hard for women, for black women in Saskatchewan and Alberta, and they had to go and do other things. So my great-grandmother ended up looking after a lot of children, and she was kind of mean to a lot of them because a lot of them ran away. And what they said that would happen is they'd send them down to, because the Lafayettes were 100 miles away from all the other black people, they weren't relatives, so they sent women down to the Lafayettes because they were six boys, I think. And they sent them down there to try to get a husband. And two of them made it, my mom and my aunt. Okay, 1910, what do I have here? So that was Edmund and Texanna Jameson. That's my great-grandmother and her husband. They arrived from Oklahoma. See how it's spelled? J-E-M-I-S-O-N? Jameson? But their name became Jamerson, as no one could read or write. So the census in the United States, it says Jameson. And then, 1900 census, say Jameson. And this is the names of everybody. But then the... And I think the 1910 census, well, no, it wouldn't have been because they arrived in March. And at first they settled in Napa Valley and North Balfour, as I said. Now it was really a struggle because if you know about Oklahoma, if you know anything about the history in Oklahoma, for black people, a lot of them went there because it was a real opportunity, like coming from the south to go to Oklahoma. But what happened is many of them became very prosperous. And in one town, it was mainly black people. There were doctors and lawyers and all kinds of different people. Everything that's possible for a community. And they burned that community out. Just burned the whole thing out. And they didn't do that where my grandmother lived, but that's one of the reasons that they came to Canada. But then what happened in Canada in 1911, I'll show you the slide in a minute, there was a fight to prevent black immigrants from coming. And some of them, it was because of the weather that they went back and the kind of land that was given to them. And particularly in Alberta, if anything happened, if a white woman was raped, or something, it was obviously a black man, and things like that were happening in Alberta. It wasn't so much here in Saskatchewan because it was a lot of, in Alberta, there were a lot of black people that had settled in Edmonton, and that had become a problem. So there was some impact on education, a lot on religion because they really believed in their faith to keep surviving. And I'll tell you a little bit about that Maidstone in a minute. But on August 12th, 1911, His Excellency in Council, in virtue, whatever that is, of the provisions of subsection C of section 38 of the Immigration Act, was pleased to order, and is hereby ordered as follows. For a period of 1 year from and 1 year after the date hereof of the landing in Canada, shall be and the same as prohibited of any immigrants belonging to the Negro race, which race is deemed unsuitable to the climate requirements of Canada. So there's a book written by Dr. Bruce Shepherd called Deemed Unsuitable, and that's what happened. However, this wasn't passed. This law wasn't passed, but people practiced it anyway. And I believe there were some people that were prevented from coming. But one of the things that made it difficult for them not to prevent them from coming in was that people that came were so healthy that they tried to use medical reasons to keep them out, and any other reasons or money. But the people came healthy and with money, and it was very difficult to say, you can't come in. Okay, that's Maddie Mays. And she and her husband came in 1910, and he was a pastor, and they were the ones that went to Maidstone and brought a lot of people with them. And they built the Shiloh Church. Has anybody been to see the Shiloh Church? It's up in the Maidstone area. Anyway, this is what it looks like today. It was restored, and it's an actual historical place. So if you ever get a chance to go in the summer, it's open. But the descendants of most of these people are in Alberta. So with them, in 1913, there was a petition for the creation of a local school district, and the Shiloh community split largely in favor of an inclusive school, and the local white community favored segregation. and there was an appeal to the Department of Education. So in 1950, the MLA Lyle creates a segregated school, but by the 1920s, the school started becoming integrated. And my great aunt, when she first arrived there, it was segregated. And she wanted to teach down where my dad and his brothers and sisters were. She was their aunt, and she had received an education degree from, a teaching degree from Iowa. I'm still trying to find that, too. But when she applied to teach at Oskaloosa, it's interesting, my family came from Oskaloosa, Iowa, and they named the school there, the one in the schoolhouse, families all live by Oskaloosa, they picked that name. So Aunt I wanted to go teach in Oskaloosa, but the chairman of the board said, no, black woman is teaching my child. So she never got there. So in 1925, she was still teaching, and she'd wanted to go in 1925, I think it was 24, 25. So she had married a local Maidstone person, and she became angry and moved to South America. And my grandfather says that she probably, there was a coup down in South America, I'm not sure which, so I'm trying to find out which country it was, but he figured she started it, so because she was so feisty. And this is just a picture of the family in 1924. My grandmother there. She, at the age of 49 in 1932, she was giving birth to her 15th child and died in childbirth. 49. Yeah. The child also died. Mm-hmm. She went to that. I have a nice story about Lily, too, because she was adopted by some people in the States because of reasons. So we never knew her mother or who she was, and I didn't find her. But the interesting thing, the woman that raised her, when they wrote about her death, that she was 104, the woman that raised her. And the headline said, "Oldest Negro Mammy Dies." And find some really interesting things that they wrote about back in those days. So my family, Carl and Rose, are married in 1932. They live near the homestead, and they have 8 children. And all of us were born on the farm. Anybody here not born in the hospital? Nowadays, you're not born in the hospital because of the new midwifery thing, but you weren't born in the hospital, Mary?
No.
Was that a choice, or is that just the way it was?
Well, my mom lived in the village, yeah. New York village in Zambia, so the hospital was there.
Yeah.
So I was born in a hut. So they don't know my birthday either.
Oh,
so
my.
They have to guess. It was in the rainy season.
Okay. So what birthday have you picked?
22nd November.
Okay.
It's in the rainy season.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, we were all born in the farm because the only one that was born in Rosetown was my brother Arnold, who was born in June. So it was easy to get to the... Because it's dry, the ground would have been dry.
Yeah, that was the custom back then, because I'm Ukrainian.
Yeah.
But all my parents, everybody was born on the farm.
Yeah.
So I think my generation was the first that got hospitals.
Yeah. So, yeah. But we'd like to tell all these stories to our nephews and nieces and grandchildren. My nephew one day told me, that, "Auntie, I'm tired of listening. You tell me that you had to get up before you went to bed to walk 7 miles to school."
Yeah. In cold winter.
Yeah, right. And this is a picture of family. Now, I don't know if you can see my grandfather. He doesn't look like James, too. Mm-hmm. He was up with the hair and everything. So, but he was born 20 years after James. And that's the family. And for us, you can see some of it. There's a couple of people, white people, because we were the only black family in that area. Okay, and our legacy, well, there's my aunt. And that gal in the middle was the first person of African ancestry that we know that got her nursing degree in Saskatoon, about 53 or something. And I believe that is Reuben Mays, the grandson of Maddie Mays, great-grandson of Maddie Mays. He was the first person, I think, in Saskatchewan that went into the NFL. And the gal up there, her name is Cheryl Fogle, and she's an artist and a poet and writer. And, she lived in Saskatchewan for a while. But she's an Alberta now.
Who are those two ladies on the side?
On the
left side.
This will go back.
Yeah, those two ladies.
Oh, that's my Aunt Ina and another teacher at, I believe that woman is white, but she was a teacher there at the main school. That is my Aunt Ina, who's very feisty. Apparently the story goes that she was in South America, and probably in the 50s sometime, she wanted to come back to Canada. And so she wrote to the Lafayettes and asked them if they would sponsor her. And my uncles, who didn't like her because she was mean to their mother, wouldn't sponsor her. And my aunts, who knew nothing about her when they found out, were very annoyed. Because they didn't find out until the 70s or 80s or something. Yeah, they didn't know where she was. But yeah, that's my great aunt. Yeah, she married a farmer, a person named Farmer. Okay. Does everybody know about, now going back to Saka, have everybody seen this in the Wascana Park? You know, there to ski or see? That's because of Saka that's up there. It's just south of the Munich Museum. It was between the Bath Shell and the Speaker's Corner. And I don't know who those people, Christine Luanga. She just persevered. Back in 2005, well before that, I guess, they wanted the people that started the Saskatchewan African Canadian Heritage Museum, and it's all just a virtual museum. They wanted a monument to, first they started out, they wanted a monument for Dr. Shad had been here. And then they wanted a monument that would express, you know, the contribution of people of African ancestry have and are making to Saskatchewan. So they worked hard on that, and the federal government gave us some money, and there it is. Like, it's just unbelievable. That in itself is kind of a miracle that happened. I never believed it happened, and kind of didn't even agree with it because it cost so much money in the first place, and it would never happen. And, but then they made Lynn Binge and I write the proposal. Neither one of us are much in agreement with it. We didn't get $100,000 spent on people. But, I mean, it's just amazing that is there. And it's called the Honoring Tree, and it recognizes our Saskatchewan motto for many people's strength. It's a life-giving legacy that celebrates diversity. And we had a lot of partners that helped us with it. The university here was part of it. The federal government, the Saskatchewan government, and the city of Regina. So it was, and the vision was to honor all our past and build new relationships. And we invite you to join in any of the events that we have out there. So we hold an annual family walkathon every last Saturday in June. Just come on up there. We walk from there to the legislature and back. And then our hope is that we will have a barbecue or something and have more fun with it, but we haven't been able to manage that. All we've been able to manage so far is have our annual general meeting in the park after. we want an invitation to schools during Education Week in September for them to go out and do some activities around there. We hope it to become a tourist site. And we plan some indoor activities in December. Our values and principles, we are all equal and have a contribution to make. And no barrier should impede anyone from participating fully. And the future is full of hope for all of us. So what can you do? Tell others about our honoring tree and come out there and plan events related to the honoring tree and what it represents. And so what inspires us? Like this here quote, through many dangers, toils, and snares, we have already come. This is from Martin Luther King. It was grace that brought us safe thus far, and grace will lead us home. Of course, that part of it was from the hymn by John Newton, the slave trader that got wisdom and wrote the song after being a slave trader. And Martin added, when we allow freedom to ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, that's what inspires
us. You've got to say it like Martin Luther King.
Okay, go ahead. God, I would him try, I would be in trouble with somebody. But my favorite is, of course, this is my hero. I mean, anybody that goes to prison for 27 years and comes out and is forgiving people, like that just is beyond, beyond anything.
I'm reading his book right now.
Huh? Pardon?
I'm reading his autobiography.
He said, for to be free is not merely to cast off one's chains, but live in a way that respects and enhances the freedom of others. And now it's like, wow. So, anyway, there are the struggle for people of African ancestry that continues in many places. But so now, does anybody have any questions? One of the things I'd like to share is that when we moved back here in 1956, I was the only black student in the six high schools in Regina for 3 years. In Regina. We were the only black family in Regina in 1956 that I know of. I think there was some kids in our class that were part black, but they didn't know it. And there was a woman that I think worked for Shumiatcher, and she did his cleaning and all that. And we were the only black people in 1956 until, like, and I was the only one in the schools, but in, I know in 1957 and 58 there were baseball players and football players that came here, and, but they only stayed for the season and then went gone again. But that was very interesting for me.
No, you did feel for you in class, but...
Well, you see, what happened with me, having grown up in Rosedale, being the only black family, I think for me what happened is I had five older siblings. And when they were, we had track and field, we were always the best. And they would say, call them names and stuff and say, you know, run, so-and-so, run, kind of thing. But they learned how it, my parents had taught me that sticks and stones will break your bones and names will never hurt you. And I remember in early 1950s looking up in Webster's, I think it was Webster's Dictionary, the word nigger. And it said, stupid person. And I looked at it and said, well, like my mom and dad said, I'm not a stupid person. Mm-hmm. So, and what they told me, if somebody calls you that, they're really thinking about themselves. And yeah, I was a stupid person who's calling me a stupid person. They're really a stupid person. So. And so that was really a blessing for me. And I think my brothers and sisters had cleared the way for me already. You know, like, if anybody wants to fight about anything, forget it. So by the time I ran it, I really didn't experience any, so any racism. But I know when my first husband was American, and I lived down there for a few years, and I lived in Virginia, not knowing about James Armistead, or I would have found him. But the interesting thing, and I lived in North Dakota, which is just across the border. If I would cross that border, like when I lived in the States, and I know a lot of it was me, I always knew I was black, but as soon as I crossed the border, I felt like getting down and kissing the ground, and I never thought about being different. Down there, I did all the time. In Virginia, like they would say, you know, you got an accent, you're different, and whatever. And I did. There was a gal from Canada, from Nova Scotia. She and I, like when I lived there, I just felt like a foreigner. And I had nothing in common with anybody, black people, white people, and nothing. Like it was just weird.
Where were you there for?
In Virginia, I was there 2 years, and in North Dakota, about 3.
But,
yeah.
I've known you all these years, and I never.
Yeah, right. When I was in Virginia, they wouldn't accept my psych nursing, so I got a job in Virginia's finest department store, and I was fairer than some of the people there, so I got to work in the jewelry department, mm-hmm. in Virginia's finest department store, and I understood how people got rich, and I worked in in the stationary tube. But people there would bring back 5 cent thread. 5 cent thread and want their money back. And when I worked in the jewelry department, we sell these pearls for $2, $2.50, and they would come back with these pearls. I've been there for a couple of years, and I'd never seen these pearls before. And you give them their money back, $2.50 for pearls. It's the most unbelievable thing I've ever. But I worked with a girl who was educated, and she was going to school in Minnesota, and one Christmas we were working, and I was talking about, like, there was no snow. One time it did snow there. It was the first time in my life I ever got stuck, because the road just disappeared. But this girl, we were talking about Christmas, and I said, oh man, I just miss, like, they didn't have mandarin oranges, they didn't have snow, like, what kind of place is this? And I was already resentful that I was 2,000 miles away from home. And so I was complaining about this, and you know, like, we get mandarin orange and nuts in our stockings and pecan nuts. I don't even see any pecans here. I just love them. And she says, yeah, I know, and I just love nematodes. And I said, oh, yeah, I know. My brother used to, when we were little, he would take the nutcracker and go to my toe and says, Carol, I'm off. And she said, oh, Carol, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. She said, you're so regular. I didn't realize. So I just had some experiences like that, but I was just really blessed to have learned that that's their problem. I think what it started for me was also in psych nursing. I was just an 18-year-old kid, and I'm starting there. We used to work most of the time, and then have two hours of classes. And I went into this. I was working on the geriatric ward, and the nurse said to me, go there and help that woman fold clothing, but don't talk to her. She doesn't want to talk. So nice to talk. And I grew up on a farm. You don't talk to people. I think to myself, it's crazy. So I go in and I say, oh, you're really folding those clothing really nice. And she says, you black bitch, you get out of here before you can't get. And okay, I look at myself and I'm not really black. And I grew up on a farm, and I know what a bitch is. It's a female little dog. So I'm not that. So there I learned not to take anything personal. When it came to my workspace, I didn't take anything personal. And I got caught a lot of names there. But the interesting thing, that was in 1960. And black didn't come in, I think, until, 1965 or 1968, being called black. And I came to the conclusion that we think some people are mentally ill when really they're just 5 years ahead of their time, and they know what kind of words you're supposed to use.
Isn't that interesting? New definition of mental illness. They're ahead of their time.
Hey, any other questions? Yeah.
Yes. I was just curious about the story you were telling about Dr. Shad and how he's only able to practice medicine with First Nations people and veterinary medicine. And you mentioned that Garth was the one who told that. I'm just wondering if you could tell me a bit more about...
Garth Bain was one of a social worker that we worked with, and he lived in Melford, and so he knew all the stories.
Okay. What's his last name?
Bain. B-A-I-N.
No, B-A-Y-N-E.
Is it Y-N-E?
Yeah.
Sorry. Where is he now?
He's in Saskatoon. We're just outside of Saskatoon. Yes?
Do you know what crime your uncle committed that he was sent to war?
Yeah.
Or is it a family secret?
Well, as long as nobody tells, he stabbed his wife. He didn't kill her, but he stabbed her.
There's one other question. I was actually just in the Waver Museum recently, and I was kind of surprised actually to see the number of psychiatric nurses and other staff of African descent there.
Yep.
And there's a lot.
My sister was the first one to graduate, I think.
Yeah. I'm curious, you know, if there's any specific reason why people were drawn to that profession or to the Waver area in particular.
I suspect someone went there. And then the others started, realized that was a good place to go. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure who
might have been the person, because I think your bunch went to North Battleford, they met in the hospital there, and to Brandon. So, yeah. Sure. Some had come, I think, already as site nurses from England.
Oh, okay.
And so they may have discovered that and sent word back.
And I know even in the Caribbean, there's lots of folks who left and went away with hospital training.
Yeah.
And site training. So I guess the word spread.
Yeah.
Is it helping someone?
Yeah, because it was, people were treated well.
I just read in the paper last night that the movie 12 Years a Slave is based on a true story.
Yeah.
And they're going to be starting to include that in the curriculum.
Oh, okay. Yes. Yeah.
Don't you think it's about time?
Well, yeah. Yeah, we have someone writing a book that for kids that's based on Dr. Shad, so it should be coming out next year. Everybody buy it. So.
Thank you.
So thank you so much, Carol. That was so interesting. Mm-hmm. And if you want more information about SATA,
yes,
it's on the internet.
SATA.org.
Yeah, it's on the internet and you can join that. And on behalf of the library, thank you so much, Carol.
Oh, thank you, my dear.
Yeah.
Thank you
for coming.
Okay. So are there cookies out there?
Yes, there are cookies out there. And I don't know whether it's coffee or tea, but there's something.
Thank you. That's nice.
Well, it's really nice to see you guys.
Yeah, nice to see you.
Those are
Hi.
I'm going to March 22nd. Yeah.
I. Lean machine.
Yes. I.